Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Roger, we got a roll.
Tower clear.
Roger, roll.
The headline shows that we can get maybe a section in Gaia MTV with a radio section for Coast to Coast AM and BBS Radio. That would be really great.
Right. The next time I speak to Jay Widener, I'll mention that because he is running that Gaia MTV network.
That's great. Well, you know, connections always work in this field. And I'm sure that Douglas and Donald will be very happy with this if this happens. So, yes. So, let's continue with the next subject. William, my radio show is called ET First Contact Radio because I see the post-disclosure scenario when most of the people, of the population of the world, will be informed that it will lead to an official moment when I believe the benevolent extraterrestrials will make contact with us and also land their ships. How do you see this scenario?
Well, I see it a little differently. I think that one of the things that's going to happen is, depending upon what the full extent of that disclosure is, I mean, is disclosure simply a United States president or a British prime minister getting before the media at a press conference and saying, well, by the way, the stories about UFOs are true. We have been visited. Our government knows about it. So let's put that question to rest. I don't think that's going to be the only thing that's going to happen, because you've got a lot of chips, a lot of dominoes have to fall at that point. For example, what is the real connection between extraterrestrials and human beings? What is the connection between extraterrestrials and human history? Do we rewrite human history? Is the interaction between humans and extraterrestrials so extensive that everything we believed about our history, about our religion, about how we got here, how life formed on this planet, will that all have to change? And is humanity ready for that level of change? And even if there's going to be disclosure, I have a pet theory about this, which says that, let's say that Barack Obama, President Obama, got up before a press conference and said, yes, flying saucers are real. We have had contact with extraterrestrials. So it's true. This is disclosure. I still think that there are large elements of the American public that would say it's a lie, he's hoaxing it, it's really an excuse to take away our guns. I mean, you name it, it's an abridgment of our freedom. I think that given the current environment, that somehow disclosure and the fact there is a greater non-divine power that's visiting us would create more hostility than it would create a sense of benevolence and peace. That's my private opinion.
Okay, and right. I have a different opinion, and of course I can have. Because in my radio show, I both interview people with a scientific background like yourself, but also people with a spiritual, paranormal background. And those people that claim to have telepathic contact with benevolent ETs say that there are different scenarios, you see, and those spiritual, so-called spiritual people, they say that at one point all media channels will be taken over by benevolent ETs and that we will have a 3-month or 6-month broadcast 24/7 to inform the world population in every language about our true history, and then the landings can follow in a safe way. But of course, it's very difficult to prove this, and many people on the internet have been expecting this for many years, and I believe that Sheldon Idle already predicted this in 1993. So what is your opinion about this?
Well, first of all, I think that I look at it from the point of view of what would we do, what would human beings do if we were disclosing our presence to a less advanced culture on a different planet. So let's say that it is 2020 and we've had multiple missions to Mars. And one of the things we discover about Mars is that there is life on Mars, and there is a culture on Mars, and there's a culture on Mars of sapient beings. So they're not just animals. They are actually, it's a sapient life form. What would we do to disclose our presence to the Martians? Would we take over, if they have television, would we take over their television channels? Would we watch them? Would we try to infiltrate their government, if there is a government, their civilization, look for the key power nodes in their civilization and try to influence it that way? I think if you look at the way human beings would try to announce themselves to a distant civilization that may well turn hostile in our presence, that's the way the aliens would announce themselves to us. And I think, again, they've already done that. My feeling is that they're already here, that they've already infiltrated themselves into various power nodes in all governments and in all businesses around the world, that they are, in some ways, as best they can, manipulating our history and manipulating our development to a point where the actual revelation of their continued presence won't be such a shock that it would result in violence. I think that's really what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you speak about sentient beings, because that's what we are, then to impose on media channels to take it over would could be seen as a hostile act.
Absolutely. It's an invasion. It's an invasion of our communication system. You would see people literally, you know, there are people in the United States called doomsday preppers.
Oh, yeah.
People who build fallout shelters and tunnels and live in. I mean, it's okay. But can you imagine what would happen if suddenly all the television channels showed up with some kind of an alien presence? People of the earth, we are announcing our presence. We've waited too long. We've been here. Now you should know who we are and why we're here. I mean, I am telling you, people would be heading for the mountains. You would see people literally killing each other at that point. So no, I don't think that's going to happen. And if it did happen, it would be a very foolish thing for more advanced beings to do.
Yeah, so actually, what I understand from what you're saying is that the whole disclosure process is a slow process that's taking many years, and that slowly the stream of information is coming now more from the internet, and you know, apps like GaiaMTV and the History Channel that are providing truthful information to the public, where you also had a major role. So this, you think this is more a process that's taking many years to get the world population ready, right?
I think it's taking many generations. Mm-hmm. Again, if you use human scientific experimentation as a model, think and what we've learned over the past century and a half, think of how human beings breed certain kinds of animals as test subjects. But also, if we wanted to change animals generationally, we've had experiments in a field called epigenetics, where we've actually experimented. There's a fabulous book, a fabulous story called Pottinger's Cats, which everybody should look at. where based on the kind of food these cats were fed, successive generations either thrived or became weaker and died. So can you imagine extraterrestrials seeding us mentally and spiritually and intellectually with certain kinds of knowledge so that successive generations grow up to accept this thing without revolt, without violence, without fury? So I think that's really what's going on. It's taking many, many generations, and it appears in various forms. If you look at the story of Genesis in the Bible, if you look at that story, then if you look at it from the point of view of straight literature, it's a story of extraterrestrial contact and creation of life on Earth.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I have to agree with you that this process is taking generations, in fact. And but it's, of course, it's difficult to predict that we'll reach the threshold or tipping point that the majority of the world population is well informed. Now, there are different, let's say, people with different interests on the internet. There are people that just follow the hard proof evidence, the irrefutable evidence from people like Stephen Greer from the Disclosure Project. There are people that are believing in doom and gloom, and there are people that have a positive attitude with a spiritual background that read channelings. Now, how are we going to bring those three groups together with a common vision, a vision of clarity, a vision of education? Because I think within this whole scenario is the mainstream media that is keeping up the status quo. So it would be really good if the mainstream media would start to report in a more truthful way. But of course it's controlled, and I don't see that happen very quickly. But I feel it's my responsibility, and maybe too much of a responsibility, but we all, you know, with all those radio stations on the internet, like Coast to Coast AM, BBS Radio, and many others, there are many people in the field, like David Wilcock, David Icke, and you name it, yourself. And so when are we going to reach a breakthrough in this? What is your opinion about this?
I mean, well, first of all, the mainstream media is controlled by the corporations that own them and the companies that advertise on them. So even though you may think that the mainstream media is about news and entertainment, the news is self-serving to the owners of those networks and self-serving to the people who pay for those networks. So this is not honest broker news. This is news that's skewed for those who own them. Television stations exist to make money. They exist to sell product, because by selling product, they make money. It really is that simple. So follow the money. If there's money in UFOs and benevolence and spiritual enlightenment, then that's where the networks will go. If there's more money in fear, I mean, just look at American television. If there's more money in fear, you're afraid of getting a heart attack. You're afraid that you're going to have arthritis pain that's going to debilitate you. You're afraid that you're going to have problems going to the bathroom every 5 minutes. I mean, you name it. You're afraid that your kids are going to be stuck someplace and your car is going to break. You can't get to them. Look at all the commercials that are based on absolute fear of some form of catastrophe. I've fallen and I can't get up, right? Catastrophe. That's what's driving mainstream media. It's the fear of a certain kind of catastrophe. Remove the fear and the news will change.
Yeah, that's the best way. That would be a perfect scenario. Now, Yes, I did something in 2012, kind of a threat to the mainstream media that didn't help me really. But what can we do? I mean, I spoke with Stephen Bassett in Amsterdam 2 weeks ago, and they did a nice interview with him. And you see, we want to force, and somehow, you know, wonderful action from Stephen Bassett is to send the DVDs from the citizens' hearing on disclosure to all members of Congress in the White House, and then do a tweet storm. And I think this is a brilliant idea. And he spoke also about the power of the people, that we can do petitions, that we can call politicians, that we can call people in Congress, in all governments, not only United States, but worldwide. But I'm thinking, you know, how can we influence the mainstream media? How can we change the paradigm shift? How can we change the status quo? Because I feel it's needed that the truth comes out. And I'm thinking about strategies, you might say, how to do this. So,
well, the best strategy is to, for, at least for me, the best strategy is to keep on investigating and then promoting the truth and reporting on UFO cases that are evidence-based, that are science-based, that are photograph-based, that have multiple witnesses. I mean, that really is the best way. You just keep promoting it, and you use alternate media like places like GaiaMTV and cable channels and the internet. You use alternate media to get these kinds of stories out there. And I think that it's the weight of those stories, the absolute weight of those stories, that's going to have the tipping point of getting most people to make this kind of passive, quiet acceptance that UFOs are here. And once that acceptance takes place, once it's no longer science fiction, but science fact, evidence-based fact, then I think there'll be more of an acceptance. And I think rather than make a full disclosure, the government will simply stop denying that UFOs are real. So I think more investigations, more video, keep arguing the case that even though there are intelligence agencies in this country, clandestine agencies in this country that will try to hoax things and will try to promulgate disinformation and make people look marginalized, the weight of evidence itself will be enough to force that kind of disclosure that you're talking about.
Yeah, that makes sense, yes. And are we, as a human population, you know, the informed people, are we going to reach a tipping point? I mean, how many years could it take?
It could take another 10 years, but just think of all these different scenarios. So another country lands on the moon, mm-hmm. not the United States, China, India, another country lands on the moon. And that country goes to the dark side of the moon and discovers an alien base, discovers a crashed alien spacecraft, discovers that there's other life forms that have been on the moon. Well, there's no refuting that. Mm-hmm. Does it, you know, right? So that's one thing. I think we're being prepared for that with all these Mars missions and with all the discoveries of internal water on other planets, like some of the moons of Saturn and some of the moons of Jupiter. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? And I think what's going to happen, I think the way it's going to unfold is we will discover microbial life, bacterial life, viral life on another planet, that there is life elsewhere in the solar system. It exists. And that's going to open the door to the possibility of other life. Maybe it's not a civilization just like ours. Maybe they're just bacteria, but it's bacteria that are in an evolutionary state. And so I think that's going to be shocking enough that that's going to open the door just a crack. and you will see other stories of life forms start filtering in.
Yeah, that's an interesting scenario. Yes. William, I want to ask you, what is your strongest argument for proving that there is extraterrestrial life and that has visited the Earth in the past?
I think that if you look at certain cases and the way the United States government and other governments have reacted to those cases, the proof is right there in front of you. We have physical evidence, for example, the Delphos, Kansas case, the Betty Hill case. We have physical evidence, the Lonnie Zamora case. We have testimonial evidence, over 100 years of testimonial evidence. We have video and photographic evidence, just Washington, D.C. alone, those UFOs over Washington, D.C. So there's photographic evidence. And we have evidence from documents from inside the government attesting to how the government is handling the UFO question, particularly around Roswell and around setting up the study group for Roswell. Then we have this very important eyewitness evidence from the government's own military people who've seen not just flying saucers, but the wreckage of flying saucers and actual live aliens. I believe that that kind of evidence is overwhelming.
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah, and that's a very strong argument, in fact. Yes. My biggest wish for humanity is that they know and hear the truth about creation, about the history of the Earth, and about the fact that the whole universe is populated with life, and in some cases with intelligent life, sentient life. What is your biggest wish for humanity?
Well, first of all, I have various concerns that humanity now in the 21st century, in the early 21st century, is on the verge of an extinction event. That what we're doing to the planet, the climate, what's going to happen to our civilization, the number of species that are dying off, all that points to an extinction event. And my hope is that we have the ability, the science, the political will, the human understanding that we can survive the extinction event that is happening now. And I think it is happening now. I think we're looking at an extinction event. We are literally in many ways destroying ourselves. You're seeing just this epidemic of, just in the United States alone, this epidemic of mass murders. And suicides, self-destruction. Look at the various, just looking at the Middle East, for example, without condemning anybody, what you're looking at is nothing short of individuals who are alienated from the society they are living in, joining a group that literally is an extinction group. It wants to make other cultures extinct, and in the process, will even do suicidal, will even perpetrate its own suicidal events. There's mass murder going on in the world, and it's going on right before our very eyes. And rather than say, "Let's stop the mass murder," what do we have to do this? We're entering into the mindset of mass murder. So that's part of this extinction event that's going on. So environmentally, in terms of our own self-perpetuated violence, in terms of our own political violence, in terms of looking the other way in the face of these extinction events, we are moving along our own extinction event. And we're doing it because short-sighted corporations, massively short-sighted corporations, are basically in it for the short haul, not the long haul. And so that's part of what's going on. I think we are seeing this evolution of human civilization, and the evolution is going down a dark path.
Now, well, one of the things to change the course of this distinction event is to bring truth to the people, is one. And secondly, to release, for example, zero-point energy, so that we don't need to use fossil fuels anymore, so that these corporations where you speak about will be out of business.
Well, when you look at that, the first person to promote free energy was Nikola Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikola Tesla was so excited about free wireless energy. This was the Colorado Springs experiment. He was so excited about free energy, beaming energy into people's homes, that he tried to bring J.P. Morgan, the big financer, and George Westinghouse, both of them on board, to invest in this free energy. And Morgan said to Tesla, "Why would I want free energy? How can I make any money off free energy?" So the big companies that have a stranglehold on the fossil fuel industries in the world right now, Royal Dutch Shell, BP, Exxon, all Sunoil, all these companies are going to have to change their infrastructure to accommodate charging for wireless energy. We already have the model for charging for wireless energy, don't we? AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, all the wireless communications companies charge subscription fees and data usage. So that's the wave of the future in dealing with free energy, a subscription fee, and then a wireless meter reading to monitor how much free energy you're using, wireless energy you're using, and then a monthly bill based on that. Same with fossil fuels. Rather than have gasoline stations, you then are doing home battery chargers, home electronics chargers, roadside chargers, chargers at various truck stops and service stations. So until you build out that infrastructure, imagine an infrastructure where you have all the major highways in the world. Let's just take the United States because it's where we are. So all the interstates now have or will have at some future point, say by 2020, solar arrays alongside. And these solar arrays are going to have charging strips along various lanes. And those charging strips are read by charging heads at various electronic vehicles. So when you go on an interstate or a major state road, you're charging your vehicle. When you are back at your house, you can plug it in to charge it. That will be the future of cleaning up the air and cleaning up the environment and getting out of fossil fuels. But it's going to take the companies that are now the energy companies to invest in that kind of technology, to build a new infrastructure. That will happen. That has to happen because that's the direction it's going right now. As other companies starting from scratch, like China, build out their solar infrastructure, we're going to have to build out our solar infrastructure just to keep pace.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you will see that happen.
Yeah, and if, to point out the scenario, if those energy companies will not change quickly in this process of providing clean energy, a zero-point energy, then we are definitely on the road of destruction. Now, do you think that there's any event or power that can change this scenario of destruction? Do you think that there's any power in the universe or anything that can wake us all up and like the event, you know, you heard of course about the event. Cobra is speaking about it on his website.
Sure. Well, of course, I mean, first of all, there's dramatic climate change. If you have oceans rising to the point and superstorms coming one after another and destroying coastal cities, somebody's going to have to sit up and take notice. For example, in Superstorm Hurricane Sandy, it ravaged places and caused so much damage that places like New York City, for example, even though they've done it slowly over these 24 months, nevertheless have improved the way they respond to these kind of catastrophic disasters. As we push into areas in Africa where we're encountering viruses, for example, the Ebola virus, everybody is panicking over it, but it's spurring us to develop the kinds of vaccines and the kinds of cures that will immunize various populations against the virus. Right now, we're harvesting the blood, which contains the antigens, of people who've recovered from the Ebola virus and using that for vaccines. So yes, it will take various types of catastrophes or near catastrophes to galvanize human government structures and corporate structures to respond. But ultimately, it's going to take two things. One, there's a profit motive. Companies have to see that they'll make more money doing something new than doing something old. And governments who have to respond to provide for the general welfare. So between those two, there's going to have to be some workable arrangement that will solve the kinds of problems that humanity is going to be facing over the course of the next 25 years.
Yeah, and of course, what I'm speaking about is, for example, a person I interviewed on my radio station, his name is Alkesh, and another one is called Cobra from his blog, 2012portal.blogspot.com.
Right.
Those persons predict a future event, and this event will be planned and originated from what they call source. And this will change everything. This will arrest the so-called dark cabal, the people that are controlling us, that are above the banking system and above those corporations. In your viewpoint, do you see that event as a possible reality, or, well, how do you see that?
Well, I tend not to want to engage in magical thinking. So, and I think what they're talking about is basically magical thinking. Something external to this planet, something external to our reality will suddenly come down and change things. And I just don't think that's the way the world works. I mean, when you look at how we have evolved over the past 5,000 years, we've evolved in response to events in our own environment. I mean, the Nile floods, and you build irrigation systems to channel the flooding of the Nile. The Black Sea and the Caspian Sea empty into each other, and you find ways to cope with going to ground where you're not going to be, where your civilization is not going to be drowned. You develop tools. Tools enable the human brain to differentiate its hemispheres, and that enables the development of language. Language enables the development of human hierarchical structures, civilized structures. Those structures mean human beings can then evolve into things like hunting parties. They can evolve from lone hunters into agricultural societies. Agricultural societies mean you can form governments, you can store food, you can grow food, you can process food. These are all real events in the development of civilizations. So I think that's been the response to various types of cataclysms and catastrophes. And I think extinction events like climate change are going to be the galvanizing principles for spurring human evolution to new levels of cooperation.
Yeah, that sounds actually very logical and natural for me, because I would see and love to see the Earth liberated from those greedy corporations. But at the same time, it's important to be realistic, and I think that's what you are. You're realistic in this, in the pointing out of history, how we evolved as a human species on this planet.
Yes, and remember, I mean, while we condemn corporations, and I certainly think they're greedy and they certainly do some despicable things, I agree with that. Remember the how and why corporations were first formed. They didn't come from outer space. Corporations grew out of the late Renaissance, early modern need to amalgamate financial resources to engage in exploration. Those were the first large corporations, the British East India Company, the West India Company, corporations being founded in the Italian city-states. That's where the banking industry started. The first Federal Express and UPS were the Knights Templar during the latter part of the Crusades. So corporations came out of human experience. They came out of the need to create entities that will enable human beings to go to different places, because the power of the many was greater than the power of the one. Okay? So yes, maybe they're out of control. Yes, maybe they become their own, they exist for their own purposes. But I tend to think that because people make up corporations, they're made of stockholders, they're made of people who can buy and sell stock, they're made of people who invest their money in banks and take their money out of banks, that events, seeing corporations do things, look at how it was the corporate world, it was the corporate world as well as the government world that ended apartheid in South Africa. Okay, they can be focused on good as opposed to just greed.
I totally agree. And let's call out to those corporations to start to have a responsible policy in using renewable energies, because I know that people on high places are listening to our radio show, as well as secret services. So let's all be responsible human beings and just to let the corporations know that what you said, Dr. Burns, is that there's more money in renewable technologies than in the old system. So yes, I think there's hope for humanity, there's hope for us all. And I just want to quote from Star Trek, Star Trek 2, The Wrath of Khan. Captain Kirk is standing in the engine room, and Dr. Spock is inside the matter-antimatter converter, and he's dying from the radiation. And Dr. Spock says to Captain Kirk, "The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few." And then he dies and he puts his fingers in a split position, like two fingers on each side. And he says, "You always have been and always will be my best friend." So then he dies and he comes back alive in Star Trek 3. But this quote, "The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few." When we think about this quote, it's a very deep wisdom that the many, the humanity, all the people on the earth, have the right to have a bright future, to have the right to have free energy, the right to live in peace, the right to have education, the right to have a clean environment and a future for all of us, for the future generations. Then the people in power should see this quote for truth and see that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Yes, but remember what Captain Kirk said in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Mm-hmm. When after Spock's memory had returned, because they brought Spock back to the planet Vulcan, mm-hmm. and his memory had returned, Spock looked at Kirk. This was after the Enterprise was destroyed because the Klingons had boarded the Enterprise, and the Enterprise was destroyed, and Kirk and the crew flew back in the Klingon Bird of Prey. I used to write for Star Trek to the Klingon Bird of Prey.
Wow, did you? Wow.
Yeah, and so Spock asks Kirk, after he says, "I am and always will be your friend," he says, "Why did you all risk your lives to bring me back here?" Mm-hmm. And remember what Kirk said to Spock, "The needs of the one mm-hmm. outweigh the needs of the many."
I remember that, yes. Yeah, then it turns it around.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just beautiful. I want to announce to the listeners that this coming Sunday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern time, let's see, we have a time change to winter time in Europe, so that will be...
Yes, remember, Sunday is, you're back on standard time.
Yeah, we are already in Europe, so...
Okay.
Announce to the listeners that you are coming back on Sunday on findingvoicesradio.com with your amazing wife. And we'll have a two-hour beautiful radio broadcast. So 11 a.m. Pacific time for all the people that want to tune in. 1 p.m. No, 2 p.m. Eastern time. And that will be 6 GMT and 7... Central European time. Yeah, that's it. So, Dr. Burns or Bill, I want to thank you for being on the network on ET First Contact Radio. And we had an amazing discussion, and I want to continue this discussion on Sunday. So, we'll have more interesting things to cover on Sunday on findingvoicesradio.com, 11 a.m. Pacific.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it. And for all the listeners that have tuned in over the world, stay tuned for the latest galactic news, and my thanks goes out to Douglas Newsom and Donald Newsom, the founders of BBS Radio. Namaste, my friends. Love and light.